Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 592. Going to recap Fab, talk about some strategy topics once again, which have been really fun to discuss, and much, much more. You can find myself on Twitter at BDintric, and you can find this gentleman who has been titled the Terms of Efficiency, the King of Fab right now. He is likely the most efficient performer in the main event this year. He has a top five main event team with a single bullet, and is probably playing at the highest level than anyone in the game right now. He looks like one of the best players in the NFBC right now. You can find him on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. And if you want to watch the YouTube later, check out his face right now. Mike Curlin, how we doing, my friend?
Sorry, my face has an itch, buddy. man, listen, it's King Curlin.
I screenshotted that the second I saw it this morning just for this.
it's King Curlin to you, buddy.
Oh, by the way, I've also saved that to my phone like a week ago when I first saw that show up on, because I'm going to use that at some point in time. Don't you worry. That is one of the best Photoshops ever.
Yeah, that was a fish. Fish made it happen. Yeah. And honestly, I saved it to my phone. And that, now it's like, you have to lean into it, because the more you, if you show you hate something, you know, your buddies are going to give you a hard time. So I just lean into it. Yeah. But because, you know, they're the fellow degenerates that are rooting for me. Kind of like it's a good underdog story. It's a Cinderella underdog story. No one expected this. I'm obviously off to a really strong start. We're a third of the way through the year, a little more than that. Little less than 4 months, so 3+ months is what I like to say. And we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, I'm excited. I'm obsessive over it. And each week that goes by that I'm staying in the top 10 overall is another week where I'm like, here, my hopes are just getting a little higher and higher. At the end of the day, I really want to just, if I can win my league, I'm honestly, that's kind of the first goal. But I mean, being this far up in the standings, a third of the way through does start, you know, start feeling optimistic, but then, you know, things are happening. You mentioned it right before we started. An injury can take place and shut everything down. I mean, I lost Mullins, I lost Steele. That's kind of two bigger losses. I know Steele, the reason why I look at Steele is not as like, maybe I've justified it in my head easier, because he was a late round pick, going around pick 300 for Steele. And he's given you 60 innings of pretty much elite performance that you weren't expecting from him. So at the end of the day, I feel like I could stream to make up the difference. And between what I stream and what I got from him, I think ultimately gave me an overall return on investment considering his cost. So I think it's been easier to kind of trick my mind into believing that if I have to drop Steele, I'm fine with that. But I'm not dropping him yet, obviously, because it says to be short term. I'll give him a shot. And the reason why I'm a little optimistic with Steele, I know we're already going off. Look at this, a tangent in the first 60 seconds. The reason why I'm even optimistic with Steele isn't because I have him on plenty of rosters. I've already made my peace with it. I was okay. If I had to drop him, I was okay with it. I was ready to move on this week. I really was. But it's the fact that they took him out. First off, they let him finish the inning, which was dumb, but they let him finish it. He got through it. The velo never dipped. It wasn't like Chris Sale, where he was down a mile and a half per hour. It wasn't like other guys that when they have an arm issue, their velo dips before they get pulled. His velo sustained that whole outing. So with his velo being in line with normal velo readings, I do tend to actually buy into this being not a huge deal. And I know it's the rare occasion, one out of every like 10 pitchers that has like a forearm or a shoulder issue. They you know, every so often it's not a big deal. And it turns out it wasn't a big deal. Steele might be with that one occurrence, that the atypical occurrence of that being the thing. So I'm still cautiously optimistic, but again, I'm not getting my hopes up. If he has a setback or anything, he's probably off my roster next week. But
yeah, and the thing is, a lot of the steel stuff is it's been positive news. Again, what news is real, what news isn't,
to like, exactly
kind of talked about. But compared to other issues in a similar injury, that it's been much more positive. There's been no second opinion searched out. There's been like all these things where compared to other people he's seen, and I've kind of talked about that on other shows too. And I think we've talked about it on this show, is like, I just dropped Nick Lodolo in my five. I've dropped a few lately, but I dropped my final share this past week when he got moved to the 60 day, you know, he's not coming back till at least July if you're lucky. And it's probably more like August by the time he's ready to go. You can probably try to add him back at a certain point in time. But like you mentioned, we talk about injuries can make anything change. I had like a top three OC team for a while, not overall in the league, but it had contention, like chances to move. And then I looked at my roster like two or three weeks ago, and like everybody on the bench was like on the IL. And I'm like, it just destroys your entire team, and you're trying to mix and match. At 12, you can kind of get away. 15, like you're in, it's next to impossible. And we talked about that pretty in depth with the Seth Mullins thing last week. But
I'm making it work.
Yeah, you are. And we'll get into that.
For but now.
There was an interesting conversation amongst all the, you know, joking today on your success. Cujo was involved in it, and Guilds was involved in it, of course. And they were talking about, like, because you mentioned, oh, I'm holding this guy because so-and-so, and Guilds is like, well, I had to drop, you know, this guy because I can't afford zeros anymore. And I think it's a fun conversation for NFBC players. Now, I apologize if you're not an NFBC player right now, because it's going to get really kind of in the weeds for you. But without an IL spot, and then his argument, Cujo's argument, was he couldn't afford a zero because you can make changes Monday through Thursday, Friday through Sunday for hitters. Now, with everyone getting hurt all the time now, if he didn't have that extra bat option on the bench, say his guy gets hurt in the first half of the week, it's a zero for the rest of the week where he could fill in with that bench option for the weekend. And I think it takes a whole nother level of strategy to the situation that I know I'm even guilty of not looking at. Maybe I should have been dropping injured guys earlier, thinking like, hey, I need backup guys on the bench. Like I'm cognizant of the weekend schedule versus the opening schedule. I get that. I guess I just haven't been as aggressive on needing to make sure I have those extra options just in case on the bench. Is that something you ever look into? I thought I took that away from the conversation this morning, not all the jabbing at you stuff.
Oh yeah, well, everyone, listen. I'm like everyone's favorite punching bag, and I'm okay. I welcome it, but I do realize I walk around with this chip on my shoulder. I think it's years of on Twitter almost having to prove that you know what you're talking about, because everyone kind of questions you initially, and then people start respecting you, and you're not used to that. Where that switch occurs, and when you're becoming like an industry person, so to speak, this switch of like people questioning you to respecting you happens for the most part. And I feel like I haven't been able to recognize the difference. So I feel like every time someone comments, I feel like they're pushing back. And I think it's almost like this natural. And that's why I think Rob mentioned it. He's like, dude, like, you think everyone's, I'm like, it's like, you just kind of years of dealing with it and years of being wrong before learning I was wrong, or understanding the process behind my thinking was wrong and reconfiguring it and kind of making my analysis better. I feel like that's what it is. It's just this constant guard up of like, hey, I not only do I need to prove I know what I'm talking about still, or at least I have this in my back of my head that I have to. So yeah, I realize that I kind of opened myself up to being the punching bag, because people realize I take things either A, out of context, or B, I tend to react in a way of like defensive, just because that's what I've unfortunately been conditioned to do to this point. So maybe I need to take a step back and realize people aren't always coming at me. And I think that's a hard lens to not view after just the years of being the opposite, where people were legitimately coming at me for, and some of it was deservedly so. It was just one of those things where, again, there's a shift that happened and I haven't shifted with it. But anyway, you were mentioning I actually, it was funny because I actually wrote it at the very bottom of our outline. Next week, we can discuss stashing strategy, but I guess we're not going to wait till next week. So mentioning, no, it's okay. I wrote it there because I figured the reason you led the show with it was my fab process was, or the fab thing was kind of what everyone was talking about. Like, I'm getting a whole bunch of crap because of my bids, and that's kind of where it started with
here's a trick, Curlin. You can briefly mention stashing. We could dig into it deeper next week.
But really? It's me.
I'm just kidding.
Come on. No stopping me. You got the wheels rolling. It's funny that you say that, because I did that, and that's how I dropped. That's part of what led me to dropping Morrell. And that's kind of my biggest regret to this point. Now, Morrell has regressed closer to what I expected. The reason why I was never in on him. Now he was never, I never, he's not going to be this bad, but he's obviously wasn't that good. The problem is with his approach, it's just streaky. Plus the manager doesn't play him regularly. It's a mess. But anyways, Morel's, so I dropped him, but the big thing was what you said. I was trying to avoid taking zeros, and I did, but was it worth dropping Morel in the process? No. And that's where I get, that's where I got to realize, A, if you can get lucky enough to actually have a bench piece right now, for me, it's like Owen Miller's kind of like he's performing, but he's also eligible everywhere. That's a unicorn. You don't have that option. I didn't have that option earlier in the year. And I was kind of lacking middle infield. I had Terang, who I ran out during the hot run. But I was like, oh, I'm like, well, I have like Jose Barrero. I'm like, and now it's like, okay, I didn't have a third MI, a shortstop. I was trying to avoid zero. So I was like making sure I have a backup middle infielder on my bench, backup shortstop, second baseman, and in deeper league. And so in shallower leagues, I feel like that can be a detriment as well, because now you have more options. And so now you're over here holding on to a fringe piece versus taking a chance and stashing. I think there's a time and place for it. You obviously want to avoid zeros, but you can't do it to a point where it hinders holding on to a more valuable piece, especially the way prospects and these high-end guys are being called up this year and injuries. There's so many injuries that if you get a hold of an injured player, before you know it, you're not really losing much ground while stashing an injured spot. Like, so I got a chance to talk to Phil, right? Like, me and Phil we're not tight like that, but I was like, hey, Phil, you cool? Like, I want to hit you up about something. So we were just talking about roster construction and how this year feels like a good year to be stashing or using two spots on your bench. Like for me, at least, this is where kind of my early takeaways is having one spot for an IL spot if needed and one for a stash spot coming out of the draft. Obviously we can't stash minor leaguers in NFBC formats moving forward, but big takeaway was maybe utilize being willing to flip those five spots over and over again, be really aggressive with those last five bench spots, but using two to stash high-end players via IL or via just call up, because you obviously, as we mentioned, I think almost every top prospect has gotten called up this year, feels like, right? Pretty quickly. So it's one of those things where there's this adapting I'm working on doing in terms of that. And then the Morel thing, the reason why I brought that up again, I know it's beating a dead horse, but was where I learned that playing it too safe is equally as dangerous as not playing it safe enough. There's a fine line, and I realized 1 week where I played that, and I played that fine line by when I stashed Julian, and I was almost in trouble. I had just enough to get through the week without taking a zero the whole week. I've been having a lot, but that was the thing. I had two bench bats, and I was like a whole bunch of pitchers, and I'm still. I think if I look at my roster now, I'm still kind of operating that way, where it's very, very, very little bench bats. But again, having Owen Miller, having Adames return, I'm kind of building that depth back up. Injuries get fixed and all that, but there's a fine line, and there's a time and place to take these risks, and you got to think about it. Is one period of zeros worth dropping Morel or dropping? And again, I hate it, but it's like dropping this prospect here you've been holding on to. If you were holding, because Bobby Miller was a roster in a few leagues. If you had a chance to hold Bobby Miller and you dropped him because I really want to stream this two-start pitcher, I don't know when Bobby Miller's coming up. Maybe that was obviously a bad move, all things considered now, but it was one of those things where you got to start weighing, like, because of how teams are treating these players. And then this is obviously prospect stuff, but now the IL stuff, I also want to try to, again, I try to keep two spots for just that, but in deeper formats. In shallower formats, I think the Newt Bar conversation you were talking about was a 12-teamer. Yeah. I considering the other options he had, I understood it. I didn't like it, but I understood it. You can't, and that's where you, and I think it's, you're less, I don't know
well,
if you're
and, less, and like, real, it's hard. To his point in the conversation is he had like three other guys in the IL, yeah. So Newt Bar was like the odd man out based on information, and it made, to that point, it made sense. Like, I still have Newt Bar on another team. I looked at it after he said that. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't drop him this week. But I was looking around Sunday going, what's the latest on? Like, there's nothing on Newt Bar. It's frustrating. So I see where he came from. And I guess it also comes back to another point for Cujo was, well, we'll get through this week. And if something changes, I can try to grab him cheap next week before all heck breaks loose. We'll see. But
yeah. It's just one of those things where Newt Bar, when he lands on a waiver wire, he's going to catch people's attention. No, it's not going to be a cheap reacquisition, and that's part of the issue. But again, going back to 12s, if there was a time to make that type of move, it's a 12-teamer where there is more depth, where the average, like McLain went unclaimed, like after his first week in some OCs, for reference. Yeah. So that's the type of thing that you know that there's going to be depth there to make up for Newt Bar. And I don't think Newt Bar is a special talent to a point where he's not droppable in that format. So that's where I have to go from 15 team mindset the 12 team, realizing it wasn't a bad move in my opinion. It's just a tough move, but that's why I enjoy about the NFBC. I enjoy having to make these tough moves right now. I have four players on the IL on my bench, and that's less than ideal. I have one bench hitter, which is fine. Two when Adames comes back. I honestly, if Royce Lewis ended up going on the concussion IL for whatever reason, even though he didn't have symptoms, I would plug Adames in knowing he's supposed to be activated Thursday. So at least I'm getting one game, you know, in the first period. So it's not a complete zero, but I can't tell you how many times this year I enter the week with a healthy team, and by Monday or Tuesday, I'm taking a zero for the half, that first half of the week anyway. Or by Friday evening, I have Saturday, Sunday taking zero. So you can try avoiding them all you want. It's also partially just luck. Like, you did the right thing in terms of making the right moves to avoid it, but you're still likely to get, maybe it's just my luck, or maybe it's just what I've noticed, but I feel like most injuries are happening at the beginning of these dang periods. And it's like, I'm still taking zeros. And I looked, and other players, like other teams, I was like one of the bottom 10 in plate appearances compared to other teams in the top 10 or 15 in the overall. So it's like, I'm getting good quality at bats, but I'm not taking zeros. You know, I'm streaming based on matchups, based on platoons. I'm streaming really, really strong, like heavily, but I'm getting unlucky with some injuries. So it's one of those things where it's like, I'm lucky it's been quality over quantity for me right now. But it's one of those things, like, I'm attacking plate appearances and it doesn't matter because I'm doing the right thing, and still doesn't necessarily lead to the proper results in terms of I'm trying to get those play appearances and I just wasn't getting them, or I'm getting a lot of walks.
We talked about that a lot last week with, like, you know, the Jake Bowers week, we did nothing. This last week he hits like three home runs, and
screw him. I'm done.
That's my point. Like, you just never know. Like, you can set it up for success. Like, we had a question in the Discord right now. Do you play, and this is probably in a 10 or 12 team league, but do you play Jake Fraley or do you play Jesus Sanchez? And you know, Fraley's got seven games, but two are against lefties, but he gets four in Great American Small Park, one of those being versus lefty. Yeah, Sanchez has six righties. Like, it's little things like that where you kind of pan out. And I wouldn't be shocked. We both leaned Fraley in that scenario. Neither one of us would be shocked, though. Sanchez has a better week than Fraley. Like, it's like in the writing. Yeah. Sanchez isn't striking out right now since he returned. It shocked me. Absolutely bad. Like, I wrote him up in the Fab column this week. I was like, holy crap.
You're getting two middle order bats, two of them that have favorable matchups this week in terms of, you mentioned Fraley getting four at home. I believe it's four at home. I know, yeah, the Monday game, it's four at home. And then when he doesn't play against the lefties, he will pinch hit. So he still gets, but he also might lose at bats if a lefty comes up late in the game, give and take there. But Sanchez isn't guaranteed to start all six. You would think he would start all six, but he's not guaranteed. They, like, you know, players get rested. So there's a chance he plays just five games as well, but he gets KC the first half of the week. Chicago White Sox aren't necessarily known for their pitching staff. So both those guys I want to stream. Both of them have been hitting well. I know Fraley's been running again. Don't they get the Dodgers this week? Dodgers, they do.
Yeah, you can run all over Wilson.
So if you need stolen bases, that can also be a difference maker. Do you need stolen bases? Chase Fraley. If you want some power upside.
We saw over the weekend, apparently, put the freaking Brew Crew on your schedule because they stole nine on Saturday. They stole all weekend against William Contreras and company. So it's getting worse and worse out there for some of these teams.
I wonder if they found something out about Contreras, because I feel like that wasn't always the thing.
It wasn't an issue all season, and all of a sudden it just blew up this past week.
Or are the Reds going full YOLO? Like, we're just going to let everybody do what they want. Like, green light everyone and see what happens. But that's the type of trend you take advantage of. Like, obviously the Reds are running, so if you need some bases, that's the team to stream from. Will Benson, great. Someone asked about streamers. He's a great name. I don't think we're going to get, obviously, if you're listening to this, the week probably already locked. But Will Benson is a great stream in terms of, like, chasing upside. He's going to get five out. Goes back to the same. He's on the same splits as Fraley. So the same stuff applies to him. He's showing growth in his plate approach right now. We'll see if that goes. But yeah. But I guess that goes back to circle, and then we can move on. So when it comes to ILs, I like to try to ensure zeros, but I'm willing to take a shot stashing a guy an extra week if I feel like they could be a difference maker, or willing to take a shot stashing a guy and possibly taking a zero if I think that, like, what am I picking up off the waiver wire also matters. Who am I streaming over him? Am I going to be in trouble dropping this player, never being able to find that same level of talent off the waiver wire? Now, also, we have a little less than 4 months left. Yeah. So how much time are they out? Mullins is going to miss about four more weeks, give or take, you know, maybe. And I think it was like 3 to 4 weeks was the timeline. So he could be back. I'm honestly assuming 4 to 6. I'm give me all-star break. Yeah, I'm happy.
I'd say all-star break's probably safe.
But if Mullins was out until early to mid August, it'd be a really strong, I would have had a really tough conversation with myself. I would probably still try to hold as long as possible, but he's not a safe hold anymore because there's the chance for setback starts kicking in, the chance for this. And then at that point, I mean, they're competing, but what if they're not by then? Are they going to shut them down? And all those questions have to come into mind. And that's when it's like, okay, I can maybe move on from him. And that's when you start talking about cutting those higher end talent guys. I'm not there yet. I know I saw Waxman's write up. He mentioned Justin Steele's dropped in a few leagues. I don't think that was the move to make this week, just because that, again, there's no long, like, if he was, but if he was even out for a month, I'd consider, like, that's, I don't view him, even though I love what I've seen from him and I was in on him at the draft season, I don't view him as a talent worth stashing for a month plus even. And that's, like, that's where you have to kind of dictate what you believe in to this point of the year, the player, what do you believe in long term, the talent level, the replacement level off the waiver wire. So much goes into these decisions. It's not as simple as, oh, that's a good move or not. It's it really is. I think
that's the biggest takeaway. That's why I wanted to bring up the conversation. I think that's one thing in most of our conversations. Most of this is game theory. It's just like process. There's many ways to do it. But the part Curlin just said, there's no correct way, and there's so many other circumstances that could dictate it, because maybe, like Curlin said, I have room to stash Steele. I have a spot for him. The people that dropped him, they might have a full roster of ILs, and then they're like, well, this is the dude that's going, because, you know, maybe Puck's coming back shortly, or Alvarado at the bullpen, or you got these other, like, Julio Urias maybe coming around the corner, like things like that, where, like, okay, well, Steele's the longest one away. That's the one's going to go type situation. So that's something to keep in mind as well. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, I'm going to table your fab thing, because it's very detailed. I don't want to rush through it until next week. I know it comes off the heels of this great, but I'm pretty sure
I can rush through it. I promise you.
I don't want to rush through it, because I want to actually get good player discussion on the players you listed, plus our fab. Plus, I want to ask you, do you have your sheet up about playing time right now by chance?
You know, I always have it.
I know, because some news just came through that I want to give the listeners something here. I'll try to get this out before I head back to work. Brandon Lau is on the IL. Just got put on the IL. He was day-to-day, got put on the IL with lower back inflammation. Vidal Brujan got called up. But the reason I'm asking this is, what does this look like for potentially the Taylor Walls situation?
Well, let me pull up their page real quick. So, well, it's been Paredes who's really been losing playing time against righties lately. Paredes has only started three of the last five. Now he has started back-to-back. Walls
could slide to seconds.
I'm trying to see where Walls has been. So Walls has been playing every day already. I think if anybody gains from this, it's Paredes, because of the ongoing injuries. Anyway, he went from playing like nothing against righties for again, you know how Paredes is up and down against righties, to getting run against them. But that, again, it comes with the fact that they've had injuries with Wander and stuff. So is Wander even back today? I haven't seen.
There's no lineup yet.
Of course, there's not.
Let me
check. There might be. So Walls is safe. He might play second. I can see him playing second. I can see Paredes playing second. They both play that area. I think Paredes just continues to get more run, more consistent run against righties in the short term. Because, or maybe, I don't know, is Curtis Meade healthy? I know he was like one of their top prospects. He's like the top prospect in their system. Had a decent spring on the 40 man already. There's no reason why he shouldn't come up if he's healthy. I just know. They called up
Brujan, though. So it's not.
No, I know, but I'm just trying to think of an exciting option to watch for type of thing. Yeah. But I don't think he's healthy is a problem. But Brujan's not. I'm not worried about that. That's trash. If he plays, you know, you're getting speed, but he's bit. They treat him like Olivares, but he doesn't have the talent level of Olivares shown in the past. So there's that. But yeah, I think it's Walls. I think Paredes is probably the big winner, though. Like I keep circling back to him because he was the guy that was kind of not playing against righty so much, and then next thing you know, okay, now there's playing time there, so he's getting it again. So yeah, he's the big winner. But we're talking about maybe Margot's another big winner, another guy who kind of only mostly plays against lefties but has been getting run against righties with Siri being out as well. And then obviously we'll see what happens with Franco, because that could, I'm trying to think who else could play where. okay, second base is gone, shortstop is gone, you have Walls and Paredes. Who's playing third then? Yeah, it's getting kind of, that's, I guess Brujan would probably, maybe Brujan would play right away. Or Raley can Raley play one of the corner. Or I guess Raley could play first, and then you have Yandy play third, I guess. And then Paredes a second, Walls at short.
That would potentially work if Franco's out.
I'm rambling, yeah, but yeah, it's kind of.
So we'll see. Maybe we'll get a lineup before the pod's over, because they do play an early game. Another piece of news that just came down. If you spent money this past week, Mike Soroka back to AAA.
Whew.
So that might make our Smith Shaver pick, which we will discuss later in Fab. this could get real interesting, because remember in our little message we have with the four of us from GTE, I said I'd basically, after Soroka started, I just erased him from my bids. I just took him off. I feel very, very good about that right about now.
I'm not much better. I'm not super. I wasn't really into Sorg, just because when we saw what we saw from him, it was like it seemed underwhelming. It didn't. I mean, I understand the first start was kind of promising, but it was also the Oakland A's, right? I believe it was.
Yeah, it was Oakland.
So I was like, okay, cool. He's dominating more AAA teams. Like that's what he should do. I never really viewed him as a difference maker. But I did think he'd be better than like I thought he'd be at least an average, like a fifth starter type of guy. You can kind of just plug him in based on matchups. More of like maybe in the Kyle Gibson type of guy, like useful but not great. Does that make sense? Like, that's kind of where I viewed Soroka was like that. So for him to get sent down, that I mean, Schuster, I think we're bearing the lead that Schuster's probably safe in the rotation. Schuster's been pretty solid the last few outings. No, remember, he lost that prospect shine, but we talked about a couple of episodes ago how Schuster made some changes and it's his arsenal. I haven't checked the velo and all that, but didn't he have like another decent outing recently too?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, back, I mean, four walks, that's rough, but only one strikeout, but only two earned runs. He's not much for strikeouts, but he's kind of giving you decent ratios and chances for got a win his last outing. So I don't think he's great.
Three runs or less than four straight starts. Strikeouts, he's had two good strikeout games, two not.
Yeah.
The walks are an issue. The walks are a tremendous issue.
Walks are an issue, but at least he's not letting it crush him. It's not great, but again, he's okay. He's serviceable. But yeah, I think when I say bury the lead, it's because I want to believe that Schuster is decent when really I guess he's just maybe not. But yeah, obviously. Smith-Shalver is probably obviously he's definitely the guy that has all of our attention. Just a matter of do we see him enter the rotation, and then I want to see those bids because I can't get in on them, and we'll talk about why later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit because he didn't get added in a lot of 12, so I'm gonna have some fun this weekend if that's
he wasn't eligible.
Oh, that's right, because he didn't come in until Sunday. So yeah, that's gonna get him and Abbott. We'll get to Abbott too. That'll be two fun ones this coming weekend. We'll see. Well, we're about to go down in the rabbit hole. Let's talk about some of these players you mentioned here. I think there's some fun ones to talk about because they had some big weekends, or at least their topic of conversation. Bobby Miller has lived up to the part with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He opens up in Atlanta, which is not an easy thing to do. Throws great. Comes home to Washington, pitches the way he should. But then on Sunday Night Baseball against the Yankees, six shutout innings with seven strikeouts. Dude's been great. Nearly a K per inning. Ratios are pretty solid. 3.23 xFIP. I have no problem with at all. 18.8% K to walk. What's your take on this early Bobby Miller stuff? Because Bryce Miller was the same way, and he's got shelled for two starts against the Yankees and the Rangers. But I think Bobby Miller's more than that because he's got more than two pitches basically. And Alex Fast actually had a clip on Sunday Night Baseball. Bobby Miller is like one of the only pitchers in all of baseball with four pitches with a stuff plus over 100. He's been great. So what's your thoughts on this Bobby Miller?
It's wild that he has such a great stuff plus. I believe the fastball was one of them too, but yet the four seamer is getting like, it's the only pitch that's getting hit. So he's like kind of lowered the usage of it almost the last couple starts. But Miller, I wanted to talk about him just because I think there's a lot of legitimacy here. I don't think this is obviously as good as he's going to be. I mean, I don't think he's gonna be this good because obviously you mentioned the xFIP being 3.23, the Sierra 3.5. So if he regresses, he's still regressing to a very solid and respectable level. The 54.5% ground ball rate, perfect. You want to see ground balls are great, especially if you have some strikeout upside, but able to keep the remaining pitches on the ground or remaining batted ball events on the ground. It's a win-win right there. The 18.8 KMS walk rate for Miller, you mentioned, obviously above average. We talked about it. We want 20%, so he's not quite that above average where we want it. It's above average technically because I think league average is like usually around 14%, give or take. So 18.8% still solid, very good, just not that like what we always look for 20%. That's like a weird benchmark, but it doesn't matter because it comes with a 0.76 whip. So he's not, and it's wild. It's a 0.76 whip without even being above average, like in zone rating. Right? It's like he doesn't go out of his way to attack the zone. He does have a above league average first strike percentage, but like a below league average zone percentage. This is Bobby Miller I'm talking about. So there's some good swing and miss metrics, nothing special, above average on the chase rate, below about league average on the swing strike rate. So the strikeouts, what he's doing, I think is very, like, we could believe that. That's kind of what we should expect. I don't think the Ks are going to spike upwards, but I don't think they're going to drop either. He's kind of gotten away from having that big arsenal. We saw him the first start, he kind of mixed in a little bit of everything through the kitchen sink, so to speak. And the last two starts has been heavy sinker usage in both of them, four-seamer dipping. He throws the two starts ago was a sinker slider Miller was throwing, and then last start was a sinker changeup combo, kind of heavier two pitch arsenal based on matchups. And I say based on matchups because you'll see him throw the slider mostly versus righties and the changeup mostly versus lefties. So the fact that he has a pitch to throw against each is really nice. This leaves that gives Miller a chance to kind of lean on a heavier two-pitch mix, which could lead to just a higher floor, which is fine, but obviously he still has the other pitches to mix in, so you can't just ignore those. So all things considered, that was like a little mini deep dive on Bobby Miller. I really like what we're seeing at the end of the day. There's going to be some, you know, give back game here probably in the near future, but I do think there's a longer term sustainability here in the skill set than I've seen for guys like you mentioned, Bryce Miller, having just the one pitch with lacking secondaries. At least Miller has those secondaries to go with the solid fastball. So all things considered, I think Bobby Miller's a very solid option rest of season, and I'd be pretty happy if I had him right now.
Yeah, I'd be happy if I had him. This is why I've been saying the whole time Bobby's the one I've wanted out of the Dodgers guys pretty much in general. I got my Bybees and my Allens. I'm cool with that. Trust me, I'm totally fine with that. But it's also why I wasn't going crazy on some other dudes. Knock on wood, it stays that way. But we'll see. We'll see what happens as Bobby Miller keeps doing his thing, because the first hiccup will be fun to watch Twitter explode, because there will be one, like you said. That's just the nature of the beast.
I got my Nom Nom Monster ready.
Yeah, I bet you do.
People hate that thing. It's hilarious. I do it just to troll everyone.
And Wander Franco's hitting second today on Monday.
Is he?
He's back.
Dang it. So, see, okay, so I tweeted out how I was thinking about sitting Bayo, but then I'm like, wait, the Rays might be without Siri and without Wander, but Wander's probably not 100%, because Wander was also dealing with a shoulder injury on top of the hamstring.
Siri is out, by the way.
Siri is still out, and now Brandon Lau is out, so... it's interesting, but Bayo becomes a lot more interesting against this lineup that looks like it's missing some major, you know, main pieces to it. But then you have also the Yankees, which was the other matchup for Bayo that I was scared of, because the Yankees have been hitting really well.
And Judge might be out.
Now Judge might be out. Yep. So now Bayo becomes a very interesting stream. It goes from like, I'm not touching him with your roster to, oh, well, here we go. I'm probably going to regret it, but I'm thinking I'm going to plug him in. Unfortunately, like, he's been so good outside of last start.
Bayo's starting for me. I'll take it.
Yeah.
He's not gonna be an ace, but he's gonna give you way more good starts than bad. So I'm expecting bads from time to time. And with him, it's the walks. It's just limit the walks.
He was really good the three or four outings before the last one where the walks did him in, but he gave up a lot of like really bad luck content. I watched that start too. So I was like, I know Bayo was better than what he showed last start. He actually got away with all the bad whip last start, but it was just one of those things where, you know, the Rays have been raying everybody. The Yankees were like a top five or six team against righties the last 2 weeks in OPS and WRC plus. So I was like, ooh, like this is a sit. But now I'm like, oh, I'm going back on my word, and I'm probably gonna have to tweet out put one in my draft to tweet out like, hey, I'm taking this back. I'm probably gonna start them, because I can't sit there and claim one thing and then be like, yeah, no, I'm shifting my thought process, but at least here's why. Type of thing. I think I have a good enough reason, but I'm still scared. It's not an easy start against the Rays ever.
No,
it's the Rays.
And then just another real quick one here. Diaz, Yandy is DHing, Paredes at first, Walls at third, Brujan is starting at second with Lau's first game on the IL. He's missed the last couple games, but something to keep in mind as well. You mentioned Owen Miller on this sheet, and this is a guy I've had to write up for like 3 weeks in a row because no one adds him, but he keeps doing things. And it's slowed down a bit, but not a lot. He's still productive. The power's not there, but you didn't really expect that from Owen Miller. What I wanted to highlight, he started playing regularly for Milwaukee, give or take May 12th. That's kind of the date I'm using. Since then, 337 average, 4 homers, 5 stolen bases, 13 runs scored, and 12 RBIs. I think you'd be pretty pumped to have that scenario. 381 BABIP's high, but at the same time, not crazy. Like if it regresses a bit, that's fine. We've talked about Miller before. This is a dude that has shown promise from time to time. So I'm still in on this, especially like I know Luis Urias is coming back on Tuesday, Willie Adames on Thursday, but there's still so many injuries in Milwaukee that there's going to be ways to mix and match, I think. And I know we've talked about it in the Discord and whatnot. So what's your thoughts here on Owen Miller?
I think we could see Terang get sent down. My boy Terang, he's been awful.
It's real.
I could see him getting sent down, especially with the Urias can play second or third. Owen Miller can play second or third. Owen Miller can also play the outfield. Brian Anderson isn't really keeping him away from it. There's a DH spot wide open right now for them. I mean, they have John Singleton for reference playing games. So obviously they have room for Owen Miller. I don't think playing time is an issue. I don't even believe what we're seeing for the most part. He's always been a great contact guy. Miller, his own contact rates have always been around 90%. I think this year it's 87.5%, 90% last year. He's always been great at making contact, really great at limiting swing and miss. He elevates the ball enough for the power to play up. It's a 44% ground ball rate. It's not like elite or anything, but it's solid. And in that ballpark, if he's elevating the ball over 50% of the time, that's going to play up a little bit. So, but I don't buy the power. There's not really much barrel rate there. There's not really much. He hasn't barreled the ball much. He hasn't hit the ball that hard. But if he makes enough contact and gets in the air enough, some of those balls will get out of the park just because of that. But all things considered, Owen Miller, just right now you ride it out. Is it legitimate? No. Is it going to last? No. He has a career high stolen bases randomly, and he's done it in like way less games. People are like, I don't buy the stolen bases. I'm like, you don't have to buy them to keep him in there and hope that he keeps it up. It's one of those things where Miller's playing. He's always had some stolen bases, so you know he could do it. Miller's playing. He's also playing on a team now in the Brewers that are very aggressive on base paths, always have been. So now it's a team philosophy thing. Batting at the top of the lineup, you're not gonna. I think some of his best weeks might have been behind him, but why not ride with it and see what happens? He's another one. I think they have a 7-game week too. So if nothing else, stream this week, and if he's trash, drop him.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I'm ready to jump off the train soon, but I'm not ready to now because he's still been good enough. You know, playing time is king, and we talk about his flexibility is huge because that goes back to the very beginning of having zeros on your bench. A guy like Miller helps you move things around and try to avoid a zero. They do have 7 games this week at Cincinnati, 3 again at home against Baltimore, and then 3 at home against the A's. He has a phenomenal setup coming up. Like, these are great matchups for Owen Miller. Next week, they have 5 games. Like, that could be time to jump. It's the Twins and the Pirates, though, so the Pirates series actually don't look too bad. So it's just a matter of kind of seeing your roster construction, but for sure this week, kind of look ahead and see where you land from there. The third player you mentioned was Tristan McKenzie, and this was awesome to see Sticks on the mound on Sunday. 5 shutout innings with 1 hit, 1 walk, and 10 Ks. He looked filthy. His rehab starts are really good. There's always positive news coming out of there, and you never know with rehab starts because of the quality of competition and whatnot. But he looked really, really good on Sunday. I don't expect him to be that good every time because I'm a realist. But at the same time, it's a big, big boom to fantasy roster. So what did you take away from that? You're on mute.
Oh, I made that rookie mistake that I told myself I'm done making. And, of course, I made it. Because I hear there's other podcasts that people do it. I'm like, haha, I've been there, done that. And I'm like, I don't do it anymore. Yeah,
at least he didn't fall asleep. It's okay.
I've done that only once. All right. I found the audio a couple years back. I forgot the clip. It wasn't even that good. It was just funnier for me and George than it wasn't really a good. It doesn't matter. Anyway, Tristan McKenzie. So he came. It was great to see him come out and be kind of almost like right where he left off. And I say that because, you know, a lot of starters, relievers, whatever, they come out and their velo's a little down. They look rusty. McKenzie was not that. He looked great. Even his fastball was up half a tick. That could just be the adrenaline pumping. Who knows? But the one thing I took away was the 10 strikeouts were great and all. It was the fact that his slider looks different. It was he utilized it about the same. 18% usage was, I think, 20% on the year was average. But he dropped it like 1.7 miles per hour. And you're thinking, oh, well, there's a drop in velo. It's not good. Well, it's good when there's a different change in terms of the profile of how it moves. So McKenzie's slider, although down 1.7 miles per hour, had 6 more inches of vertical movement and 2 less inches of horizontal movement. So it was getting a way different movement profile to it. And that just intrigued me because it came with the 86% whiff rate, unsustainably high. Plus, it was probably the first time teams have really had a look at that new shaped slider. But the fact that
It's a sweeper by chance because of the velocity and shape change?
That's what I'm saying. I don't. It's
still, I'm no pitching guru. I'm just saying the way things are changing this year.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. I mean, I'd have to see how it profiles compared to other ones. I haven't looked that far into it, to be honest. But if it was that, that's fine. But I think they also depend. They classify it as a slider for now, so we'll see. But yeah, it could be one of those things where it still has more slider shape to it. It's just one of those things. A slider movement. It's just one of those things where has more depth to it. Maybe, I don't know. But I'm just saying that the fact that I saw that change. And if this is like legitimately a really solid slider now, like better than last year, that gives him the fastball to play off of now. And it's just one of those things where it could keep Tristan McKenzie's little mini breakout we saw in the second half rolling into this, you know, this half of the year. Because we're almost in the second half of the season already. So it's one of those things where maybe we'll be able to pile together 2 halves to make a whole in terms of what we're seeing here. But if McKenzie is able to even be close to the pitcher he was down the stretch last year, I think people are going to be very happy they held out for him. But yeah, what we saw from McKenzie is very promising. And just that new look slider it caught my attention. So I just wanted to bring it up because it could be not that he's unlocking another level, but people were kind of like questioning if he would sustain what he did in the second half. And maybe the slider can help that production sustain is what I wanted to mention and throw out there.
Oh, that's a good one. A good call. Cause I saw your tweet on that. So I was wondering if that's where you're going with this. So, and if you guys aren't following Curlin, I give him a lot of crap because he's a good friend of mine. And I know that's how we communicate with each other, but he's a great follower, a great analyst. So I recommend checking out his Twitter. Cause he tweets out a lot of stuff like that at least make you kind of go, huh. And then you kind of go from there. So I definitely recommend checking that out. Let's check out the fab for the week. There's one big name and then a bunch of fun names is why I kind of like these kind of weeks is we get deeper into the season and you kind of see like, okay, some guys make sense. Others, it's like, okay, this might be more of a streaming pick right now. And that's where like the discussions come into play on roster construction and whatnot. So, you know, we do OCs, 12 teams. Curlin will give you the 15-team lingo as well. But the main man was Royce Lewis. He was the only player that picked up in over 100 leagues, which is rare. That's what I'm saying. We're at that point of the year. Lewis was picked up in 202 leagues. He's pretty much gone everywhere now. As high as 320, as low as 5. OCs are amazing. I was telling Curlin, because we were talking, he was doing his main event, and he obviously won with like a 158 to 156 or something. Amazing, perfect, almost. That's why he's the man this year, like Whisperer. But in my OCs, like one was over like $100. The other two were like $60 to $70, like cheap. To get a $5 one, that would have been insane, because I was putting like $34 keep him honest bids out there, thinking like, there's no chance. I would have been like blown away if I got Royce Lewis on my roster. But it's been a weird start, to be honest here. He's played in 6 games. He has 5 hits, one's a double, and 2 home runs. He's striking out 32% with 0 walks, and he's hitting .200. If you dig in a little deeper, he's got an 11.8% barrel rate. It's not bad, but only a 35% hard hit rate. Like, we know how good he is. I'm not denying that at all. I think he's a beast. He should be awesome. The start kind of makes me scratch my head a little bit. So what's your thoughts on this Royce Lewis? Because we know why everyone picked him up. But what are your like overall thoughts on him?
I think that he's an electric player. I think Royce Lewis is an electric player. I think the power is going to be there. The speed's questionable, not because he doesn't have it, because will they let him run? That's kind of what the question, that's really the only question you should have when it comes to Lewis. He can still run. He didn't, the fact that he ran in the minors and he didn't have to kind of also suggests that maybe they'll let him run a little bit. I just don't know if we should expect it, but there will be some volatility in the batting average, I believe. But if you look at the track record, it's outside of like one double A season, 2019 in general, I should say, it's been rather strong, always carrying high BABIPs, which makes sense given the speed, the strikeouts. Yeah. A little bit of a concern, but you know, Josh Young is another guy that comes to mind with like bad strikeout rate, but still producing because he's making the hits matter. And I think Lewis will have that type of skill set where he's got some swing and miss to his game. He is chasing. There's probably some excitability there. He's not making as much contact as he has in the past. But at the end of the day, I think you bet on the tools here. You bet on the pedigree. I know there's injury risk here. There's a lot to like here in terms of upside. And in this part of the year, you mentioned it in terms of like things getting kind of weird, but name a player with this much ceiling and guaranteed playing time this where you can get him off the waiver wire this time of the year. If we're drafting today, Royce Lewis is pushing top 100 pick probably.
Yes.
Give or take. 100%. So you're getting that off the waiver wire. That's something you take a shot on, even if, and I think I wrote, we'll talk about this a little, even if you don't really need it, so to speak, I think you should have still considered bidding on them just because there's a, again, it's another discussion, but anyway, at the end of the day, my expectations are if he's closer to a 250, 260 hitter, I'm fine with that. That's great. I'll take that. But you're getting that with plus skills. And I think the plus skills, good batting order, should get some decent counting stats in the process. I'll even sign up for 240 with all the rest I just said, honestly.
He can fill up the other stat columns, like you said. That's what makes him electric. I just expected a little more the way he started out, but we'll see.
McClain.
Oh, yeah, McClain. No, I'm not worried about Lewis at all. I have zero concerns about Lewis. Maybe I'll look back on this in 3 weeks and bite my tongue. But
I did that with McClain the next week. I was like, well, yeah. What was I thinking? Not being more aggressive. Just I think we're just a reactionary crew. Well,
I couldn't be aggressive.
Well, yeah, we saw him go for a little bit of 68 in a main, which was like, what? How did he go that low? And you realize, like, I actually texted Ryan because I was like, dude, how'd you spike that one? He's like, yeah, we just didn't, we wanted him. We just couldn't afford more. And they got him. It was one of those things where they put in their best bid and they just happened to land on him. But I get it. My thing was, I think we are, and I think Dom was mentioning this on the pod with Rob on the Pool Hitter podcast, was we are very reactionary as industry. If he went out there and hit a home run and stolen base, went like 1-for-4 with a home run and stolen base on Sunday, his bids weren't going to be, we wouldn't have seen a single bid under 100 across the board, probably.
No doubt about it.
But he went out there, not only did he strike out, I think he went 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, but then he had that crazy, almost broke his neck looking play. Mm-hmm. That's what drove bids down. That's why there was such a fluctuation 100%. There, I think. Yeah. But
I wish he would have hit 2 home runs and stole the base, because then more people in my leagues would have been having money. So that'd be awesome.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have got him for my price, so I'm happy he didn't do that. But at the end of the day, I think that going for him, I think this was kind of one of the final guys. I mean, him, obviously, you have Ellie coming up sooner than later, probably.
I'd rather have Royce right now. But
that's the thing. You know, Royce is here. You know he's here to stay. I'd say more than likely. I'd be very surprised they sent him down, even if he struggled. And yeah. We know what he can do when healthy. I know health is a question, but it's one of those things where tell me another player coming up that we know for sure is coming up sooner than later that can offer this type of upside paired with guaranteed playing time. I don't think that – and – that's the thing. Like right now, there's a lot of guys I like in a given week, but most of them are streamers. Most of them are platoon bats that are off to a hot start or in the middle of a hot stretch that I know has a very favorable matchup or a very favorable schedule. Lewis, you don't have to play that game. It's kind of like you get them and now you can either start them or you're benching them, but you're not sitting here like, okay, what's my next move? And I'm most likely going to start him through the good and bad because he's the type of guy that I think like if you want a guy that can give you a morale type of run, I think Lewis gives you that, but without that type of floor.
True.
Is the difference.
Well, we'll see how it goes. I think it was a good pickup. Like you said, we keep saying this, one of the last ones to come, but then they just keep calling up people. So we'll see how it goes. The next one here, now it's going to get fun. Picked up in 98 leagues, as high as $77, as low as a buck. Willie Castro of the Minnesota Twins. This one shocked me when I saw this. I'm like, whoa. I get it. He's utility. There's tons of injuries in Minnesota. You got, Buxton's got his rib issues. Correa's got his plantar fasciitis. He should go to the IL. The outfield's always losing someone, it feels like. Like there's injuries all over Minnesota. Gallo just went to the IL. Castro can play everywhere. Castro is the Twins' Owen Miller. Just going to throw that out to you right now. That's who he is. Since May 9th, about a month ago, .299 average, 4 homers, 9 stolen bases. But he strikes out 35.4% of the time. Strikes out a ton. So it's kind of an all or nothing deal with Castro. But he's a switch hitter. So he's going to play. Like he's pretty much platoon proof, but he's really, really good. I get the reason behind it. I was surprised he was this popular, but it could be based on all the injuries in Minnesota. The Twins play at Tampa for 3 and then at Toronto for 3. Not the easiest schedule either. So what are your thoughts on Willie Castro?
I just think he's a streamer. He's a guy that I know he was kind of a popular ad a couple weeks ago when he first started getting runs, flashing it, and then kind of slowed down. And he was actually leaving. He was actually falling into a weak side platoon before the injuries. So the injuries saved him from that because he, even with playing 2 out of the last 3 righties, he's only played against 3 of the last 5 total, to give you for reference. So he wasn't like he was losing playing time against righties before the injuries popped up for Castro. So Willie Castro is a guy that the tools are there, but the swing and miss is there. The floor is legitimately weak side platoon, obviously, but the ceiling, if he's playing and they're letting him run, he's going to give you some flash weeks. It's just one of those things where are you going to catch the hot or are you going to catch the cold? But Castro, that's kind of his skill set. There's tools there, but there's also just a lack of consistency.
Yes, indeed. Stop me if you've heard this before. We have a potential new closer in Colorado. Justin Lawrence was added in 93 leagues, as high as $91, as low as a dollar. Someday people will learn about rostering pitchers in general, let alone closers in Colorado. But Justin Lawrence picked up 2 saves in the last 2 outings in Kansas City. He's been decent overall, 306 ERA, 346 xFIP. The K to walk is at a 17.7. So he's the next man up. That's why he got picked up. You got a full week in Coors to enjoy it. So what are your thoughts here? I had zero interest, zero.
I almost tweeted about him just to try to pump the bids, but I'm not that guy, so I didn't.
You're not really close.
Cerebro does the opposite. Look, whoever he tweets, do the opposite of. So if he he's talking down a player, he likes him. Talking up a player, he knows you want the money to go up. I think everyone knows that, but Cerebro does it anyway. So I applaud the consistency, regardless of us knowing his intent. But at the end of the day, though, like you mentioned, it's kind of a spec. We're at that time of the year, though. I mean, people lost Jose Alvarado, who they were banking on. And Kimbrel looks really good that I don't know if Alvarado's even guaranteed to get full run. He might be splitting opportunities. And then you have obviously Pierce Johnson and Bard, who both failed. One was due to mental health, so that's not really fair. But the other one being performance induced. And then, of course, Bard still being in the picture. Maybe Bard gets another shot. Who knows? But anyway, and then Fairbanks went down. And people had Adam. But the people that went and got Adam, not all of them were Fairbanks managers. So then people were like, oh, it's a short-term thing. So no one really thought Adam was going to be a thing that stuck, and it did. So, or it has, because of Fairbanks getting re-injured. So people are, it's that weird time where people are kind of hurting for closers. And one of the few times where there's actually a path to consistent saves. We haven't had that for a few weeks. I think the last time was the Kimbrel Castro, Miguel Castro ads, which Castro just blew a save. So now is he in trouble his next time out? I'm not feeling confident about Castro suddenly getting the next save off after blowing that one.
Miguel Castro from Arizona, who you're talking about, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I know there's like 15 of them on the show right now, but yes.
Well, Miguel Castro. I just have to double check because one, I guess, benefit of the First Pitch podcast that keeps me up to date on a lot of things, the Chafin Castro thing is very intriguing. Castro's like the, I'd say he's like the 60% to Chafin's 40. Mm-hmm. Chafin still picks up a save or two every week. So that's an interesting combination. I just wanted to throw that tidbit out there because I think Castro's going to be fine. I don't think he's going to go anywhere just for the fact he's not the sole closer.
No, that's fair, but I think I'm afraid, like, what if he loses? Okay, the next opportunity, even though he's rested, he doesn't get it now. And now it's like, well, crap, he just pitched the eighth.
Maybe and even switch roles, basically.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I don't want, I'm hoping that doesn't happen.
And Anthony Duff's pitching really well, too.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where Castro is on my short list of, like, I'm holding him. I'm starting him this week, actually, because I'm still chasing saves. But, I mean, it was one outing. We have seen them be more patient. I know McGuff was also a guy that got multiple opportunities, blew multiple saves before losing the spot. So if they trust Castro to put him there initially, I think they're going to give him a little more leash. But still, it's one of those things where I think he's not guaranteed as much. Like you mentioned it's like 60, 70. I think it's 60+%. I don't know. I feel like I follow him closely because I'm obsessive like that. But it's one of those things where I feel like he was getting, you know, the lion's share, and I'm afraid that could shift closer to 50-50. And that, so maybe that again circles back to why Lawrence was added in aggressively, just because people realize saves aren't guaranteed there. And then you have Holmes, who gets like a save or a win a week, which is very useful, but it's inconsistent with the save ops. And it's tough. You're trying to get a leg up on a situation where things are starting to get kind of thin, where there hasn't been a whole lot of turnover like people expected either. People were expecting more turnover because every last few years there's been a ton of closer turnover. That's kind of lacked this year. So people have to kind of be more aggressive even on less than the desirable opportunities, you know, just because it's one of the few that have come up. We've had, what, four guys, decent guys off the waiver wire this year, or four, maybe five if we're lucky. I can only think of four.
Yeah, not a ton of closers. Yeah, you're right.
Pierce Johnson was one of them. The other Coors guy. Like, the other Coors guy.
That was kind of my tongue-in-cheek joke. Stop me if you've heard this before. Like,
yeah,
we go through the Colorado rotation every year.
Right now, the thing is, though, it almost makes sense. It's almost justified because they're the only place that has any type of carousel. You know what I mean? Like, injury.
Would you have been someone to go and try to pick up Jose Alvarado this week if available, since he's coming back at the end of the week?
Yes, but I don't think I would have got him because I'm sure there was somebody probably wildly more, not aggressive, wildly more optimistic in his outlook. I tend to be more of like in the camp of Kimbrel's going to hold on to majority, if not, obviously it's going to be at least a split, but I think Kimbrel's earned that, like, hey, this is his role for now. He has the track record. He's the righty. They could play matchups. So obviously if there's lefties coming up, Alvaro will still factor. I don't know if it's going to be a 50-50 split, but it's not going to be Alvarado's gig like it was, in my opinion. That's where my head's at with that whole situation. So I don't think I would have even bid nearly enough to get Alvarado unless I was truly desperate just to get saves, because he can be. But the problem is also it was an arm injury. How hard he throws, I could see that being an issue again moving forward too. So there's no guarantee. And this wasn't even, remember, wasn't his injury not supposed to be even this long of an issue? Wasn't it supposed to be like a couple weeks? And now it's been like
Alvarado's,
a month.
Alvarado's supposed to be a little while.
Was it? I thought it was like a, we're going to try.
There was a threat. It was going to be really long until they got better news.
Oh, see, I thought it was the opposite. I thought it was like, oh yeah, it's going to be a couple weeks. He'll be back. Maybe I misread or misunderstood the situation.
There was a bunch of them at that time. A lot of people got hurt right around there.
Maybe. I don't know. At the end of the day, I would have been in, but probably not would have been in enough to get him for what it would have cost.
Yep. I'm with you there. Last week we talked about getting some spec bids in on Jesus Sanchez for a buck because I got him in a few places, not enough because he wasn't towards the top of my list. Well, people are on board. So it's kind of one of those makes you feel good, Curly, when you're kind of ahead of the curve thing, which you have been because you're the Fab Whisperer. So that's been a great thing for you. But this week he was the fourth most added player in OCs. Jesus Sanchez was 86 leagues, as high as $33, as low as a buck. And, you know, since coming off the IL, he's looked really good. We kind of talked about it off air. I wrote about him in one of our articles over the weekend. He played in six games, hit safely in four of them, hit a home run, a couple RBIs. Most important thing to me, 15% walk rate, 15% strikeout rate. That was really good to see from Jesus Sanchez. He's still getting comfortable, it feels like, up there. I love him. Six games against righties. We already talked about all that this week. But just in general, he was crushing it before he got injured. And just to see him kind of pick up where he left off a bit was good to see.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed. And that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat. But Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Yeah, Jesus Sanchez, the fact that he has a few stolen bases is kind of surprising, but I'll take it, three. So, you know, he's not a zero there. The BABIP's inflated, but Sanchez is going to be okay. I think we're seeing some growth there, and we've seen how good he can be. Even if it's just a hot stretch, say it's a hot 2 months, enjoy it and drop him if he goes back. But he, like, if you look at it, the hard hit rate, it's the highest it's been since 2020, but that's not fair because 2020 was 14 events. But so if you go to 2021, where he kind of had that, where he had some, you know, some of that love too, we're talking a barrel rate in line with that, a hard hit rate in line with that. Actually higher than that, but in line. What I mean by in line is the fact that it's closer to that season when everybody was like in on him. You know, everyone coming off 2021, I believe it was, is when everybody was kind of in, buying in the 150-ish ADP, maybe 200 if you're lucky. He was like 2022's Lars Nootbaar, probably, given how, you know, just that hot name, like everyone was really buying into the way he finished, or the hot stretch he had the year before. It feels like that, and he was kind of going in the same similar ADP range. You know what I mean? Pretty much what Brian De La Cruz was this year was Sanchez of last year too. Same idea, but so Sanchez is a guy that I'm kind of buying into the fact that, okay, he went through some growing pains. The shift is gone. He was kind of one of those guys that should have benefited from the shift being gone. There is going to be swing and miss in Sanchez's game, but when he makes contact, the ball goes a long way and he's making better decisions. He's chasing less. Swing and strike rate still worse than league average, but not terribly low. I just, there's reasons for optimism. He's not going to be a 300 hitter, so get that out of your head. But when we're talking about power help, we're talking about a guy who can obviously sprinkle in some speed, but don't even count that. He's banging in the middle of the lineup now. Sanchez, there's a lot of reasons to like him. And yeah, I was in on him. I dropped him and then I reacquired him because I'm kind of rotating those guys. And I think Sanchez is still, that's the thing about Sanchez though. He's still a platoon bat. So he's not a guy that you can count on week in, week out. That's part of the issue, part of what makes him hard to roster in shallower formats. But a guy that you should be, he's for me right now, he'd be that team streamer where you're playing him per period based on matchups, because he is pinch hitting when lefties start the game. So it's not like he's not getting in at all. But you mentioned feeling good. I don't know how I feel about this. I'm going to bring it up because I don't know if we're going to get to him, but to Supita Marcano, I added him last week. I think we talked about Adam just because I need a shortstop. He was playing well. He's been leading off. And I'm like, so there's path to play appearances, a little pop, a little speed. There's like intrigue. I dropped him this week, and he was added in 26 main events for as high as $96.
I had him in all my 15 leagues this week.
And that's the thing. So I understood it, but I don't know if, like, was I too quick to pull the trigger now, or was I ahead of the curve of dropping him?
And the thing with a guy like that is you had the great matchup week. This week, when you're looking at Pittsburgh,
two lefties,
it's not the craziest of weeks, but well, it's
he has Oakland.
Bingo. That's what it is. He gets Oakland, and then when he gets the Mets, it's not the elite Mets.
But the thing about Oakland is, sure, he'll get the bullpen because he'll probably pinch hit, but he doesn't play against a lot of lefties, and he has started against some, but he has two out of three in Oakland, but two lefties. So how many play appearances is he getting? And that was that's kind of what pushed me to dropping him. And I only dropped the reason why I dropped him was for one player. It was almost, it goes full circle. I dropped one. When a player like this, I find useful, but it was the fact that I dropped him for the other player I play shortstop in Royce Lewis. So that was the reason why I dropped him. I dropped him for a guy that I was I need a shortstop.
We're gonna drop guys that we hate. I know, but that's kind of the moral of the question. Like,
but he was.
I'm looking at one of my OC rosters where I'm crushing the league in saves. I have like four closers. I'm like, I can't hold these guys all year. I need other stuff, but I don't want to give them back to the player pool.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't mind giving them back to player pool. It's the fact that I dropped him in a week when he was added 26 times in the main events. So half the leagues. I guess I don't know how many he was already rostered in, but there's 53 main event leagues, and half of them. So somebody picked up Marcano, and I'm the guy who drops him. So
added in 31 OCs.
So that's what I was getting at was either I'm ahead of the curve dropping him, or I made a big mistake. And it's too early to tell. Obviously, I dropped him based on matchups, and he kind of cooled down last week. He wasn't.
Panic about any of this kind of stuff.
No, at all. I don't panic about dropping a Marcano type. But it was just one of those things where it caught my attention. I'm like, I'm going against the grain here. Like really, really going against the grain.
It's not like you're debating dropping Gunnar Henderson or Anthony Volpe. You're totally fine.
Did we make the right call there? I guess Henderson's back keeps Volpe. Oh, but then we talk about Walker versus Volpe. That's a whole other discussion. Tough.
I'm just being sarcastic. Let's have a couple quick hitters here because there's actually a lot of names that are just intriguing, basically. So let's have some fun here. Hayden Wesneski was called back up, came out of the bullpen 3 2/3, pretty strong innings, one run, 4 Ks against Tampa, made two starts in AAA, 9 innings, 9 Ks, 1 earned. He's going to take the spot of Justin Steele for now. So he's got 2 starts this week. And he was added in 81 leagues for as high as 50, as low as 1. I got him for like $3 in a few leagues. What are your thoughts on Wesneski?
So, yeah, I'm just not that interested. I don't know.
No, I'm going to probably drop him next week. Don't get me wrong.
I think he's a streamer, but I think he was added as more than that in some situations. Like when you're going as high as in main events for reference, I understand pitching is a lot more scarce and maybe they think there's going to be more long-term usage there, but he went for as high as 95 and as low as 3. And like, I'm okay with him like up to $40-$50 range, which is where you were talking about. That's kind of the high end though. And that feels like at this point in the game, you're hoping for more. And he hasn't shown it to us as a starter. And I want to believe because we saw the hype in the preseason, but how long is the leash? Is there a leash? And when Steele comes back, someone's got to go. It's going to be likely him. So paying up that much for a guy that's probably, I mean, I get it. It's a 2-start week, but people are hoping that he can still turn it, be that guy that we hoped he could be in preseason. But I'm just not buying in considering what he's shown to this point. And I'm okay with streaming him. But again, some of the prices that people paid, I feel like is just a little more than I was willing to pay. I mean, I wasn't going for pitching, so it doesn't matter. But it's easy for me to talk when I didn't need the pitching, I guess. But I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. I don't like the bids this week for him.
My goal is I got him. We'll talk about when I talk about my moves. But it was cheap, stream, drop. That's where I was with Wesneski.
But that wasn't the common. That's not for everybody. That's what I'm saying. That's not the common occurrence of why people went after him. I think people just need to temper expectations. I understand going after him, taking a shot. I do understand that part. But some of the bids I just couldn't get behind there's been zero reason to believe that he's going to suddenly turn it around as a starter because he's had a couple of decent relief appearances, maybe. I haven't even looked at his relief appearances. I'm sure they've been fine.
One relief appearance, 3 2/3, one run.
That was the only one?
Yep. Since he got called back up.
And his xFIP was right in line. His xFIP was 4.47 in that start, in that appearance, and on the season it's 4.48 for reference. So he did a lot more strikeouts, but also a lot more walks. Was he just throwing different pitch mix? Was he attacking differently? Did he add some velo in that outing because he was a reliever? A lot of these things go into being a relief pitcher and making relief appearances as a starter. You'll see starters be able to ramp up their velo and stuff and be more effective. But there's a reason why they do that because they're throwing less, you know? So there's a lot that goes into it potentially. Again, I'm out basically. But in your situation, I'm okay with him as a streamer and at that cost if you got him as a streamer.
Well, Mike Soroka, 75 leagues, as high as $54, as low as $1. I got rid of all mine. I think we're out there. Just want to throw that one out there. And I just wanted to, the chat we have going on in GT, they're having fun debates on that one right now. JP Sears. Now this is one I picked him up a few weeks ago to stream at times. We've talked about guys that can kind of be bench streamers. Sears has almost graduated into that realm for me with his production. His last couple starts, the strikeouts have not been there. That's been very, very annoying with Sears, but he's still getting you decent ratios. He's getting you innings. Wins will never be a thing for Sears. But like if you look at his last four starts, for instance, he's put up 22 and a third innings, six earned, 16 Ks, 2.42 ERA. The xFIP 5.21 is terrifying. Don't get me wrong, but he's getting the job done. He's picked up in 72 leagues, as high as 37, as low as a dollar. So what do you have anything on JP Sears?
I enjoy it. I don't know if it's going to last. I mean, I went back actually a little farther. I went back his last six starts because five of his last six starts, I think it's been like two earned runs or less in each start, one being a five earned run outing. I like he goes back to the, I like Kyle Gibson comps because I think it's very fair to give a guy that's like performing, like the strikeouts aren't going to be there, but he can be decent for ratios. He's overperforming, but whatever, I'll ride it out. That's kind of what I see here. But going back to those six starts I mentioned, six starts I looked at, five of which were, let me just get it right. I was just trying to look it up on the fly here. One, two, three, four. So his last six starts, five have been two earned runs or less. One being that five earned run outing at Miami. He even limited that deadly Texas. And that's the thing. Look at his matchups. Atlanta, Houston. He's doing it against good teams is why.
Exactly. That's why really I kind of bought in. I bought in. I'm like, he's figuring this out right now, and he's still young.
Oh, I'm not saying you shouldn't give him a shot, especially if you have him, keep riding it. But the fact that it's a 27.9%, so I think it was like a 51% fly ball rate over that six start period. So those fly balls paired with like 11% barrel rate, 47% hard hit rate, I think it was as well for Sears. There's a lot of potential damage coming his way.
And I asked you where he plays his home games.
Oh, I'm aware, but is the summer going to allow the ball to stay in?
We'll see what ball we're using. That's the first question.
He faced, yes, that's true, but like over the summer, even in Oakland, I think the ball is going to fly a little more. And he did get a chance to face Atlanta on the road, at home. He faced Texas at home. So, yes, I understand that there is that, the fact that the fly balls won't kill him because
he's at Pitt and at Milwaukee this week. So, we'll see where he
Look at his home road splits. His away, he has his ERA is 5.97 on the road, 2.57 at home. He might be that guy where you just stream him at home, not on the road. So this week you mentioned both of them are on the road.
We will see. Time will tell, my friend.
On the road is scary, my friend.
Yeah, let's have fun with this one though. Clark Schmidt. I've been looking to add him a lot lately, and this two step made it more enjoyable. 67 leagues, as high as $48, as low as a dollar. He's been one that I've been watching closely because he had the big hype, kind of fell back to earth. But just his month of May in general, right? Just month of May in general, he allowed 12 runs and 30 innings pitched over six starts, 33 Ks, 3.52 ERA, 3.7 xFIP. He had an 16% K to walk because the walks are still a bit of an issue. But overall, Clark Schmidt has been very, very serviceable of late. He's actually looked pretty darn good. At Seattle, Baltimore, in Great American Small Park, pitched well. Tampa Bay smoked him. You kind of like, if that's the team that does it, okay, cool. Oakland, Cleveland did their jobs there. So all in all, like five of the six starts, two run runs or less. He had one horrific start against Tampa Bay. Otherwise, he's been very, very good. So I'm kind of – and I've read somewhere about some pitch mix changes and whatnot. So I'm kind of interested in Clark Schmidt. Yeah, I know. That's why I was trying to tee you up, buddy. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, I haven't honestly checked back in, but I do know like there was initially a shift in the production for Schmidt when he started kind of going away from the new cutter at one point. I think he might have brought it back. And then like the sweeper, I think it's just one of those things where it's a young pitcher finally getting an opportunity, playing with some things that work, some things that don't, and getting it, just figuring it out on the fly. And it's kind of nice to see for Schmidt because you're seeing it happen. And the thing is it fluctuates. If you look at his starts, he completely dropped the changeup. Not that he was utilizing it much. He completely dropped it. And the four-seamer, those are gone by the wayside, but then he'll sprinkle the changeup in like every other start. It's weird. The curveball, it's up and down. The sinker usage is up and down. The cutter usage, I don't see any consistency anymore. At one point, at least there was like look, this is shifting. But now it's like start to start, just kind of going with what he has a feel for, it seems like. Or maybe let's simplify this and look at it from a overall standpoint, not like start to start. Let's just go. I'm trying to do this on the fly, obviously, here. But I'm trying to look at his season overall usage. And the sweeper, he utilizes it pretty evenly and the most, which is fine. The sinker, mostly towards righties. The cutter, mostly towards lefties. That could explain why those two, if you look at the game-by-game logs, those two are constantly going up and down, up and down.
Yep.
So I think that's why when you look at pitch mix, you got to be careful because you got to look at matchups because you play a team like the Rays. they might load up against lefties on you. So he might have, and it probably just didn't work that day. But so you could see the sweeper is kind of consistently going up again, but the cutter, instead of it being, because I remember the cutter was kind of just heavily, he was leaning on it heavily to start the year. He leans on it more so against lefties now if there's lefties in the lineup, and then he'll lean on the sinker when there's righties. And I think the fact that he found this mix that works for him in terms of like sweeper sinker combo versus righties, sweeper cutter versus lefties, and then sprinkles in the curveball, but mostly against lefties as well. He's kind of finding what works for him right now. And it's kind of nice that he's, it's just, it's one of those things where Schmidt is, I think what we're seeing, there's a lot more legitimacy here than obviously like what you wanted from Wisniewski, you're getting from Schmidt. And I like what we're seeing here
with this. Out of all the guys we've talked about with Sears and Schmidt and all, I'm like, Schmidt's the guy I could literally see doing this for the rest of the season.
I can see him
on your team. Or at least like 80% of the time being very, very good for you.
Like right now, I feel like him and Brian Bayo kind of in that conversation of like very you want similar, them on your team. You're streaming them off your bench. They're not must starts, but they are getting close to that territory of like in a 15 teamer. It's harder to sit them than it is to start them. Like you could justify starting either one of those guys any given week right now, probably going forward in a deeper format, in a shallower format. These are guys that you want on your team, but you're streaming off your bench.
So, 100% agree with you on that one. A couple more guys that I want to, because I said there's a lot of interesting names here. Like we won't even get to all of them, but some very like interesting names, like I said. Nolan Jones got called up by the Rockies, actually playing for now. 64 teams added him. 54. I'm surprised only 64, to be honest. Maybe some got him last week. Briefly, as high as $54, as low as a dollar. Jones has played 9 games, hit safely in 7 of 9. He's got a home run, 3 doubles, hitting .333. A couple things though. 38.7% K rate is not great. 5.6% barrel on 33% hard hit rate, not great. Now he gets a full week in Colorado. That's great. How would you assess Nolan Jones, who, you know, eventually CJ Cron will come back? He's played primarily at first. He's played 2 of the last 3 in right field, though, which is nice to see. So what are your thoughts on Nolan Jones?
I honestly have no idea. You know, we're in on him. We were adding him last week, and it sucks because this week, sure, 6 and Coors, 3 lefties. So it's like he doesn't even get a full period against against righties. So Monday through Thursday, I'm still probably starting him, but not excited because the first, at least Monday through Thursday, he gets 2 out of 3 righties. Now he has started against lefties, so it's not like he's guaranteed to sit, but the second, you know, the Friday through Sunday period, I'm not going to start him because I doubt he stays. I doubt he starts.
Well, real quick. Let's be real. The first lefty, Sean Manaea, who cares? The next lefty is Ryan Weathers. I think we'll kind of grain of salt that too.
No, I know, but hold on, let me see the schedule change. I did upload this morning. So, and then Blake Snell is the third lefty. But the thing is he gets 2 of those 3 in Friday through Sunday. So I'm okay sitting him in that period because of the I'm gonna probably start him in the first half of the week because he gets the 2 righties and you know he'll play at least 2 of 3. But yeah, this week is a terrible week for him, and I think that's the thing. He's gonna likely be in a platoon. What might save his playing time, even when everyone returns, is he can play third base. He's played first base so far this year. He's played outfield. I think that they have a DH spot and Chris Bryant's injured. There's paths to playing time there. Harold Castro shouldn't be guaranteed playing time over Nolan Jones either. I don't see Jones necessarily getting sent down again right away. But I was more optimistic than I probably should have been. And I'm realizing, I think I'm just frustrated because this week was like the week, like, oh, cool. And last week he wasn't bad. He just was whatever. He was like, I think, very empty. Maybe a home run. I think he had a home run last week, right? So kind of empty batting average for the most part, which I'll take it because it's better than nothing. But I'm frustrated given this matchup this week. So this was not the best week to get him. I do think that we know the tools are there. I like him, but I don't know. I'm cautiously, I'm obviously probably pessimistic. I'm pretty pessimistic.
Sound that way. Yeah.
Well, it's frustrating because it goes back to not trusting the Rockies. When have they ever earned our trust?
Yeah, it's fair. It's fair.
That's really what it is. Like, because Harold Castro is getting full time playing time against righties, but why should he over Jones? He shouldn't, but will he? The fact that I have to ask that question tells you as much as I should have to tell you about my trust level in the Rockies.
Yep, I'm with you. We're not going to talk about these guys, but Joey Weimer is someone to keep an eye on, folks. He's starting to hit well last week. Plate discipline's great. Plays phenomenal defense. We'll probably be talking about him in the future. Trevor Rogers joked about last week. I got him for $1 everywhere. Well, he's added in 62 leagues this week, as high as $56. I think another great, really good rehab start. The last player I want to mention here, and again, there's
it might be worth mentioning with Rogers, Yuri Perez could be on a very, very
Because you look at his overall profile, it's not as great as it looks,
folks. Well, not even just that. He's even Craig Mish came out on the Fantasy Beat podcast. they had him on there and they talked, and he was mentioning how, yeah, Yuri's limited. Like, he's going to pitch, but he's not going to do, he might do all of his innings now. He might do some now, some later. He might. So if they come back and Rogers comes up, they have to send somebody down unless they go six man. Six man could help everyone stay healthier, but the Marlins have never gone six man as far as I know. No. I don't, Braxton's not going to be stopped. Cabrera's pitched good enough to avoid it. This could be their way of manipulating Yuri Perez's innings. So I think Yuri Perez getting sent down is a very legitimate possibility. So I'm not saying you need to necessarily prep for it, but I would say you should probably prep for it. You know, just, yep. I'm not going to say don't be reactive, don't drop them. You're probably even going to stash them, but I can't tell you how long Perez will be down. But something's going to have to give until they make a trade or something to open up another spot. But they want to preserve Perez's innings. The best way to do it is sending him down, getting him on every 6 day rotation, keeping his innings up, but limiting him. That way he can come back up when they need him later on. I wouldn't be surprised if it might be surprising to a lot of people, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's Perez that gets sent down. I thought that's just worth mentioning because there are a lot of people that are banking on Yuri Perez, what he's done and what people are hoping he continues to do, but might not be happening for your fantasy rosters in the near future.
Agreed. The last player I wanted to discuss was added in 58 leagues, as high as 228, as low as 6. I had a couple bids in, did not get him. That is Taylor Ward. He's on a 6-game hitting streak as he played nearly every day last week. Hit 385, 2 home runs, no steals, but only struck out 18.5%. I dropped Mickey Moniak pretty much everywhere this past week.
Yeah.
Taylor Ward looks back, and I just want to, like, it shouldn't be a long discussion because I think it's just a matter of, do you believe he's back?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's, it is what it is. We talked about him so many times in terms of like a couple small things he needs to fix, and maybe he finally fixed them. It was never a matter of like, oh, he fell off a cliff under the hood. It wasn't if, it was when.
It felt like
okay, it's coming, but when is it coming? And it's like, almost like full. He went full Josh Naylor because I'm sure many people benched him. And, but at this point, I mean, maybe Naylor was premature. Maybe we kind of galaxy brained that one. To be fair. We, as in, like, I was in on benching him, even though I got lucky enough not to that weekend. But the lefties, it doesn't matter. Going back to this one was well-deserved. He, like, him and Jake Berger, like, I doubt anybody, not many people started Jake Berger over the weekend because of how he's been trending down and kind of got that grand slam in the ninth. But this was after going 0-for-3 with 3 Ks. It happened to be his fourth at-bat, and he hit the grand slam. So, but regardless, Berger deserves more playing time. But that's another discussion for another day.
Another story.
But it goes back to people, unfortunately, people probably miss part of the production. However, he's definitely a guy you should be plugging back into your lineup sooner than later.
Let's talk about our pickups of the week, Curlin. So what'd you do in your big main event Fab Whispering style system?
I hate you so much. Hate you all. So picked up Royce Lewis, dropped Marcano 158 to 156. I explained my reasoning for Lewis. I do want to talk about something that's a little bit of a tangent, but it was on the notes I wrote down. I want to discuss picking up a player even though you do not need them. Is that such a thing? And I think it's very rare you should say that, because, and that this is from the guilds brought this up to me when I was early on in the year. I was like, I didn't need pitching. That's why I didn't go after Taj Bradley, among other reasons. But I was like, I just didn't need it. He's like, it's almost like you don't need it until you do. Like, you're off to a strong start. Instead of saying you don't need it, think of it as you're building onto it. I'm like, that's like a real quick flip of the switch. Like, oh, that makes, I mean, not that I didn't know that, but it was like to hear it said out loud. I was like, okay, that, you know what, let me start considering that more. So I looked at Kyle Lewis. Oh, that's a flash. That's a flashback moment. Cause I love Kyle Lewis, Royce Lewis. I looked at Royce Lewis as like that guy of like, I need to fill some holes here with Mullins out. Shortstop is obviously an issue with depth in terms of like Adames being my only guy. And then like my middle infield has been a revolving door. Owen Miller is going to last how long? So I did have an opening for him, but then the fact that he's going to gain third base. So he's going to have, you know, corner, third, short, middle utility capabilities, the upside's there. I'm like, and obviously we're getting to a point where we're shifting into like, you can kind of live in dollar days for a little bit with streaming. And by dollar days, I mean, obviously cheaper bids. I'm going to take a shot here. My last big like bid. If I don't get him, I'll be more in on Ellie than when he comes up, because that's kind of like everyone's assuming Ellie's the next man up at this point, right? So that was kind of the thinking. But I wanted to talk about that whole like there's no such like you shouldn't go after a player if you don't need them. I think it's rare that you don't need a player with the skills. Like, who's gonna sit there if he goes off and hits 300 this week with 2 home runs and stolen base? Are you gonna tell me you don't need that because of where he plays? You should be targeting the stats, ignoring the position.
It goes back to what we've said forever. Stop drafting positions, draft stats.
And that's what you should be looking at with him, is the stats he could bring you. And if you are a projections person, he projects out really well. So you can't, if you don't, even if you're not a projections guy, then you're just looking at the intangibles. Lewis has the skills. So you should be targeted. This is the type of player that you should want on your team. And if you are stacked, like for instance, I'm fortunate enough, I have Matt Chapman, Josh Jung at third base and corner infield in this team. I did not need a corner infielder, but you're going to tell me I have a better utility option? No, this guy's going to help solidify my team. And that's how I look at it with Royce Lewis at this point in the year. He's a player that you can plug in. There's no way in a deeper format specifically too, but even in shallower formats and 12 teamer, I got him in our OCQ because we lost O'Neill Cruz there. So it was one of those things where obviously that was a quick need fill, but it's hard to imagine that you have a team so good in a deeper 12 team format, you know, five outfield or middle infield, corner field, or a 15 that you don't need what he can produce. So to sit there and say you don't need him, I think it's very rare you can say that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's my thought process on that. Like, it's very rare to say you don't need him because if I didn't lose Mullins, do I still need him? Not as much, but think about now, I lost Mullins, or if I lose another piece, well, now luckily, hopefully he hits on that expectations. You know, if he hits on those projections or expectations, Lewis is a guy that suddenly I didn't need, but now I do. It gives me I think the fab remaining after all this, again, goes back to that whole flip of the switch. I think you can still stream successfully even with a limited budget. I have a very limited budget now for like the next month and a half easily. Like, I can't go in. If Ellie comes up, I'm throwing $20 at him. That's not even a real bid, but that's real for me. That's like that's like 15% of my remaining budget. But you get my point. It's like I knew what I was doing here. This was I'm taking a risk, and I got him for a great price, all things considered, compared to the market. And obviously, as you mentioned, it was $2 above the runner-up. So really happy there. Now we can get on to the less fun ones. Will Brennan, $6 unimposed. I dropped Edouard Julian. The way they're treating Julian, like we've seen Jaren Duran treated in the past. Like we've seen
Olivers.
Yeah, Olivar. He's getting that like up, down treatment. I don't trust it. And then with all these injuries piling up and they didn't call him right back up, I moved on. Plus I don't have room to stash because of the injury. So this goes back to, I would have actually probably stashed Julian if I had the opportunity to, or maybe dropped him for a different player to stash. Cause I needed healthy bodies. Brennan, he has the plus hit tool, the solid speed. Last week he's hitting like four something, a couple stolen bases over the last 2 weeks. So there's a little batting average floor, some stolen base help hitting around seventh in that lineup. If Rosario is out for some time, maybe Brennan can pop into that two spot. I mean, it's weird. They don't like to move players around that lineup. They even have Tyler Freeman batting second for some reason. But Brennan, if he keeps hitting well, and if that spot, the two spot stays open, I could see him at least shifting up the lineup. So it was one of those things where I just took a shot on him. I liked him in the preseason, and he's starting to finally get going. He has like an 80 something, like a high 80s zone contact rate. I got another guy that's really, really good with the contact skill. So finally getting going there. And then the guy was a straight up upside play here, Miguel Amaya. I dropped Yan Gomes for him, so I dropped his teammate, but they called up. Amaya hit a home run, so I put $2 on him, got him unopposed. That's fine. I dropped Yan Gomes. Gomes had the one home run last night, but it was like, thank you, because he hasn't done much else the last 2 weeks prior. And Amaya, we know there's upside there at catcher, and they wouldn't call him up if they weren't going to play him. It might be short term, but they didn't call Amaya up not to play him, and Gomes hasn't done much offensively to push him away from playing more if it's a bat thing. But also, I feel like this is a team that's also at that point where they might be sellers soon. So Amaya might be up to stay. I'm not confident in saying that just yet, but the fact that there's a potential for him to stay and there's actual upside here. I took a shot, and I think I was one of six teams in the main event that bid on him. So we'll see how that turns out for me. But at the end of the day, I like taking a shot on him, and 15 teamers, four teams bid on them. Highest bid was $2. Three of us bid two. One guy bid one. So I bid two because I don't like tying because it hurts whenever I do that. But so Amaya.
And he's winning, so he'll lose every tie.
Happen?
I said you're winning, so you'll lose every tie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I didn't want to say that. It's just one of those things. I mean, if you look at his minor league numbers, a little pop, good batting average, just upside. I really just need upside at the catcher position. Yan Gomes is good, like he's usable, but I needed something. Like I'm really just playing that catcher roulette, just trying to land on. Like I land on Yan Gomes for a good stretch. Now he's been useless. It's time to move forward, type of thing.
Gotcha. No, I like Amaya. He's good. He's got some definite appeal there. All right, for me, OC, one of my first OCs, added Jesus Sanchez, dropped Nick Prado 4-3. Added Clark Schmidt, dropped Nick Lodolo 4-1. added Will Brennan, dropped Miguel Vargas, 1-0. Added Eddie Rosario, dropped Manny Moniak, 1-0. So I spent $10 this week on four players. Pretty pumped on that one. And four guys I could probably use. Next OC added Nolan Jones, dropped Spencer Torkelson, 12-4. Mark Canha dropped Tristan Casas. I probably overspent on Canha, but 7-0 kind of surprised me a bit. I got Ezekiel Tovar for his week in Coors, plus he's been hitting really well lately. Dropped Mikel Garcia, 6-3. Added Adrian Hauser, dropped Yainer Cano, tied that one 1-1. So Hauser's he pitched well on Sunday against Oakland this week. I'll take my chances there. And then in my third OC, added AC Sanchez, dropped Nick Prado. That's the same one. Never mind. Already talked about that one. Go to the other OC. Added Nolan Jones, dropped Alex Kirilloff, 12-3. Added Tommy Henry, dropped Alex Wood, 3-0. I need pitching badly, so we have three streamers here. Added Mike Myers, dropped Luis Medina, 3-0. Added Hayden Wesneski, dropped Peter Fairbanks, 3-3. So there we go on that one. Yes, I dropped Fairbanks because I talked to you and Jorge in the chat. And the production has been down, but he's hurt again for the second time. This could just be a weird lingering thing with Fairbanks. I have saves in that league. I need starting pitching in a bad, bad way. So like hitting in that league, I'm like third in the league in hitting. I am by far dead last in pitching. It's dreadful, the difference in that league. So it's just I'm literally at the point of I don't care as much about ratios. I want Ks. I want chances at wins. And we're going to go to battle right now just to kind of move up the standings the best I can in that format. But those were the three OCs I had. All right, real quick, because I got to run soon. So we got to be quick here, Curland. Listener questions. We have a bunch of them. We're going to skip that one. Jury Rigger, he asked about weakening hitting and pitching streamers. You commented him on that already. Renegade Envy, Corbin Carroll, and where would you draft him in a redraft? He's a first-round player, back into the first round. That's where I'm at.
I can argue mid-first round. Like, yeah. Think about where
he could be mid-first round. That's fair.
Bo Bichette was getting pushed up to himself. He's everything you want a Trey Turner to be, basically. So if he went top five, wouldn't even surprise me. I don't know if he did in second chance leagues, but I feel like the longer he does this, the more likely we'll see him in that top five, top seven range next year. People are going to call it crazy. J-Rod 2.0, blah, 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 but it won't surprise any of us.
I'll take him over J-Rod.
I would too.
Yep.
But I think J-Rod's still a top, probably still a first round pick.
Oh, he's still a first round player for sure. But I think we're starting to see the warts that J-Rod does have. Anthony Gialdi asks Curlin how it feels to dominate the high stakes field week after week. Yep. If you're on video, you got the answer.
I love Gialdi. He's awesome. He's a great dude. He likes to razz me. He wants me to take more credit, and I'm like, dude, I would love
to. We all want you to.
But I need to get to the finish line first. What am I going to do? Celebrate a third of the season win? Like, okay, cool. Am I getting paid anything for this victory lap? No. Why take one? True. We take victory laps when we get there.
Fair. Taylor Johnson asks, where does Louis Varlin stack up with some of these pitching prospects call-ups like Wu and Abbott? Would you cut bait for either of them, or has he proven enough already to hold and let other squads scoop up the call-ups? Well, Varlin, we've already seen be great, so I'm kind of there. But Abbott, maybe. But I think I stick with Varlin.
You know me. First off, his name is Varlander. But yes, no, I'm gonna go with Varlin. But it goes back to you would love if Abbott does or any of them do what Varlin has done to this point. Maeda is working his way back. Does he really push Varlin out of that rotation? I'd be very surprised. He shouldn't. Is it possible? Yes. So maybe if you're concerned about that, either way though, I still right now, if I had to choose, I'm taking Varlin, Abbott, Wu in that order probably.
Yeah, I think around the same page there. Exactly. That's 100% where I'd be going on that one. Dave Petrozello asks, this is a good one because Cutter Crawford's name came up on Bubba the Bloom this last week because the same day Chris Sale got hurt and went on the IL. So Dave Petrozello asks, what do you guys think of my Cutter Crawford dart throw in mains? I've seen a lot of smart people hyping him up this morning, so I'm hopeful metrics look good. I was big on Cutter Crawford last year. I liked what we saw, but then he kind of got exposed at a point. He's gone to the bullpen in longer relief, been very, very effective. He made a three-inning start in his last time, I think, as they stretch him out some more. One run, three Ks against Tampa. But as a whole, you know, he's getting about a K per inning with the 20% K to walk. Ratios look good. I think he's just fine. It's just a matter of last year. It was a lot of like second, third time through the order things that got to him. Has he made those adjustments? So what's your thought? I think it's a spec. It's great, especially in mains where pitching's hard to find. So what's your thoughts, Curlin?
It's funny because as a starter, he has like a 24.5% K minus walk rate. And as a reliever, it's 17.3%. He's been better as a starter than a reliever. The XFIP is a 3.26 compared to a 4.3. And the 3.26 is as a starter for Crawford. So it's one of those things where he's been better almost across the board, other than limiting home runs as a starter. So, but that makes sense. Less opportunity to give him up, or more opportunity to give him up. But he's a guy that I got burned by him to start the year, and it really pissed me off because I was in on him early. So, but yeah, I like him. I think it's a great spec. And he was a guy that I actually looked to try to make room for, and I just couldn't find a spot on my roster this week. But he's a guy that I would have definitely been specking on if I had the space for him.
100%. Bill Hammock has a question. Favorite big names to buy low on that you're most sure will turn it around? Very few actually say why in person. Why a person is a good buy low outside of previous year's performance. We write it up all the time at Game of the Edge. But anybody here you're interested in, Curlin?
Other than voicing my – I mean – the obvious one has to be Trey Turner, but then it's not fair because why can't I look at past track record to say him? Yeah. His BABIP is a career low 294. He's always been a 342 or above guy. He's a career 341 guy, but last 4 years has been 342, so BABIP's low. The strikeouts are up a little bit, but we know he's pressing a little bit. The ground ball rate is – well, the ground ball rate's actually really good. He's actually hitting a ton of fly balls and a lot more infield fly balls, so I'm wondering, is he just pressing, trying to get under the ball a little bit? There's legitimate reasons to buy in. You believe in who he's been. He's only 29. He didn't just fall off a cliff. I have a hard time believing that he's suddenly chasing the ball 40% of the time. Again, some red flags last year when he was chasing more than ever. But this year, we're talking a huge spike in swing strike rate, a huge spike in chase rate, and a huge spike downward in contacts. I have a hard time buying into that being who he is all of a sudden. First year mega deal, maybe you avoid him altogether. But Trey Turner is just the obvious name, but I'm terrible. I also don't do trade columns anymore. I don't play in trade leagues, so I am incredibly biased in terms of not really, I'm incredibly biased. Like, I don't really do buy low, sell high, whatever, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not great at that because I don't play in those leagues anymore.
Yeah, Taylor Ward would have been a guy we talked about like a week ago. Like, hey, buy low on that guy. That's an angle to go off of.
I would say we talk about so many names on here. I'm trying to think. I think because we don't look at it like that. We look at it like we try to figure out what they're doing and why they're doing it, and we go that route without thinking, well, I guess if we break down a player a certain way and say, hey, I don't understand what's wrong here, that would be my way of saying buy low, I guess, if that makes any sense. If I'm like, hey, I'm looking at this, I don't get what's happening, so he should be producing, that's pretty much – that would be my way of saying buy low on a player. And we talk about so many players. So if you listen to the show, if you hear me say that, that's me saying, hey, buy low. Honestly, that's the best way for me to put it. I can't think of another buy. I can't think of another buy low right now.
I would say just like go to like Savant and look at guys that have, you know, the expected stats. I'm not a huge believer in all expected stats. We talked about that many times, but just look at guys that are like severely underperforming. And then you will have to look at past history. I hate to break it to you, but that's how it goes. But guys like Kyle Schwarber, I'd be willing to take a shot on. I know there's been some good discussions in our GT Discord about Michael Harris actually starting to get healthier. I'm not fully on board there, but I get the conversation topic. Mitch Haniger, when he's been healthy this year, has been awesome. Just can't stay healthy. So that's been a massive downplay. But like Bobby Witt Jr. could be a dude. I know he's actually not failing you, but our people are frustrated with him. So I will like point that direction. But I'd say go check out the X stats guys and see guys that are massively underperforming their X stats. Be something to look at as well.
I was going to say, or you can look the other way and go to the year-to-year leaderboards and just kind of toy with those and see if any names pop out, and then that'll give you, this guy did what? Let's go look into him. Oh, so he's on this leaderboard, even though he's been terrible, but there's something under the hood that's like, oh, this looks really good. Maybe I should go get him because maybe JD Martinez before he took off type of thing, just stuff like that. Just but JD, I don't even know if he was looking at good under the hood. If it was more so just betting on who he was and the flashes that he shows. So it's like one of those things where people, I'm not looking to buy low on Jorge Mateo for reference. I think that I don't think he's as bad as we saw. I don't think he's as bad as we saw, but I don't think he's as good as he was in May or in April either. So, but I don't know, man. Like I said, I wish I was better at this whole buy low so high thing. I can harp on it all I want, but I can't think of a buy low. I really can't think of a buy low name.
It's all good. Anthony Gialdi asks, when you win the main event, what's the first thing you'll do with your money?
Buy my wife something really nice because she deserves it with as much as she puts up with me, and she doesn't even know I'm in the main event yet. So waiting for that, hoping to surprise her with I'm hoping to surprise her with like, so I did this and this is how it turned out to be. Not necessarily the overall, but
the old story I love. Don't ask for permission, beg for forgiveness. It's so much.
Well, to be fair, I use my money I make from content. I don't go into our money for the main event anyway.
All right. Zach Waxman asks, why is the NFPC main event easier for you than Yahoo leagues we used to play in?
God, I hate everyone. Zach and I, that's where we met. We met playing on, like, we met on Roto World forums playing Yahoo leagues with just a bunch of other randoms. And then Zach got into NFBC, introduced me to NFBC. And that, now that's the rest of the history. But yeah, I wish it was that easy. If it was that easy, I would have been cashing a long time ago when I first started NFBC formats. Yep.
The guilds ask, is Chaz McCormick a good fill-in for Aaron Judge? I'll hang up and listen.
He knows the answer. Yeah, so he made that comment because his team that's second in the overall, which, by the way, shout out to guilds, he has what, two teams in the top five?
Yeah, it's what he does every year. He's a beast. And he's an absolute beast year after year after year. He's like top five in the OC for like three or four straight years, wins the overall OC last year. Dude's awesome. And he does it in mains too.
Yeah, so he has Judge on the team that's in second overall. And McCormick, I think it's one of those things where McCormick has shown flashes and bunches. And what stopped him from actually continuing that hot stretch at the beginning of the year was the injury. So McCormick was like, he was hitting for power, running, leading off. And then when he stopped leading off because he got injured, never regained it. And he's just now getting back into healthy and finding his swing and getting into form again. So I think McCormick's, he could be beyond just the once a week stream type of guy, but you're catching him in the middle of the hot streak right now. And I think just ride it out and see if he can hold it up.
Yep. And last question I got for you here is Ben Tidd asks, is Mike going to make a formal statement regarding the cheating allegations that have just surfaced? I missed those.
No comment. No, it's been so because of the three bids I've had this year, the fab bids, I've had three of them within a dollar or two of, like, and they, you know, the big, like Logan Allen, Barland, and now Lewis, where I've made three like almost perfect bids on three big names, which is not very common, I guess, to happen. And I didn't know that wasn't so common. But I'm grateful that it worked out that way in my favor. But anyway, that's why I had a whole outline of the process I wanted to discuss.
Yeah, we'll get to that next week.
Next time. Yeah, obviously next week. It's now we're an hour and a half in. So yeah, we're not going to do it now. But one of those things where, yeah, so I had somebody DM me that said, like, oh, you're cheating. But they're like, I'm just kidding. Obviously, it's great. Good luck, blah, blah, blah. So I was cool with them. I had Zach give me a hard time about cheating, jokingly, obviously. And someone else, I was like, man, these people must really believe. I'm like, people must really believe this. But no, they obviously don't.
Todd Whitestone asked, how is Mike handling being so highly placed in the NFBC main event standings and that's being viewed as a baseball savant?
I why did it take this for me to get the respect? Huh? Why did it take me being good for a third of a season? You know what? I'm gonna be like that player. Like, let me have one good half, and then people are just gonna assume I'm good for like the next 3 years. And it could have been just like, hey, Cody Bellinger. If I could spike that 1 year where Cody Bellinger was like amazing for the first half, carried over just enough to win the MVP in the second half, I'm good with that. Like, let me have my 1 year, and then it's fine. No, it's nice to kind of have your peers starting to, you know, notice you. It's nice to get that notice of like, okay, because I was the guy who made that comment about I'm a better analyst than player, and I think it's nice that I'm actually able to be like, yeah, you know what, I'm not just a good analyst, I'm a good analyst and player. And it's hard to have that balance. So like, when we think about that, there's select few names, you know, we think about like in terms of being and I'm still not gonna, even if I win and cash really well, if I do really well this year, one good year isn't enough to say I'm one of the good players consistently. But I won't be looked at as like oh, I'm just an analyst. Like, I'll be able to have that, hey, he's a decent player too type of thing. I kind of like the idea of mixing the two together.
And here is the last question. Jay Mitz asks, how much would you sell your main event team for right now?
So somebody asked me, like, I'm joking, I'll give you, I think it was actually Gills that said $6,000. He's like, I'm joking, 65. I think it legitimately would take probably like 10 to 15K easily, because I really do. Well, first of all, I believe in my process at this point. I do think I found something that works for me in my league specifically. I do trust myself to keep making mostly right decisions. Obviously, I haven't made all the right decisions, but I mean, the goal is to be right more than you're wrong, and I've done that to this point. I like where I'm at in the standings. I like where my team's at, and my team's even dealing with injuries, so when they get back. So yeah, I think it would take a legitimate like 10K plus offer for me to even consider. And even then, if that's even allowed, I doubt it, but it would be
pretty cool.
I would let somebody come in and manage my team for 10K for sure, easily. Nice. But I'm also, that's kind of like we're a third of the way here. Now, if you ask me in 3 weeks from now, I'm still there in the top 10. Oh, now it's gonna be closer to 15, 20K. So you might want to get in where it's where the cheap asking price is at, you know?
And we got cocky Mike curling by the end. I love it.
Oh, dude, you won't hear. I will victory lap this for 5 years if I spike overall on a single bullet injury.
I hope so. But we're gonna wrap it up there, everybody. Another fun filled episode in the books. Fab recap, player discussion, some strategy. We'll go deeper into strategy next week and much, much more. But make sure you follow Curland on Twitter @Mike_Curland. I'm at BD Entrick. This was Benched with Bubba, episode 592. Catch you guys next time.
For a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season, test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.